I'm very happy to welcome all of you. My name is Jaya. It's great to be here together. To feel, as we start to gather ourselves into this room, the potential of this week that we have given ourselves. It's like we're giving ourselves to ourselves for 7 days. And to be in a room of people doing that, that you're not just alone trying to give yourself to your life, but together we're doing that. We're doing our best to do that. It gives a kind of wind in the wing, under the wing. I think I better mention the one practical thing I need to mention before I get going, because I might get blown by that wind a little far. Tomorrow morning, the Qigong will be led by either Gemma or myself in the pavilion over more by the dining building. Does everyone know where that is? Yeah? Okay. And can follow on from there on the practical note. Sometimes you come to a deep rest retreat and you're like, you want to just dive right in there with the idea that we encourage you really just to literally rest as much as you can. But also, the mornings are really great. So the first morning can be kind of hard to get yourself up and go to the Qigong and the meditation before breakfast. Give yourself the chance to feel what feels better for you, but lean towards getting up, even if you're a little bit tired. If you're really tired, stay in bed. But if you're just debating, then get up and go. And the morning might feel full, but you're going to have the chance to sleep a lot. So kind of catch that wave. When I arrived here yesterday at this place for the third time and seeing what's happening in the mimosa tree in front of our house, this year it's the butterflies, these huge yellow butterflies. The first year it was hummingbirds. What kept coming to me is the word revolution. And in the I Ching, they talk about revolution as the fire in the lake. And we have a lake here, and we have some fire in this room. And I'd just like to offer the chance to really feel deeply right now where in your life we could direct the energy of fire in the lake, where we could direct energy of revolution. What needs revolution? Where is revolution already happening? Where would you wish it wasn't happening, but it is? Where would you wish that it is happening, and it's not quite? And how could you bring the wind to the wing there? And what is it to be a being? We are in revolution. As a being, we live revolution just in the seasons. And today, just looking at one of the clouds, it caught my eye. I was just watching. It was like three. One little one, one little one, one. I just watched one of them. And most of it was staying the same, but one part was just completely falling apart. So maybe there's a part of your life that's completely falling apart and looks like everything's normal. Or maybe looks like you're falling apart and everything is really steady. But to feel how natural revolution is, that it does happen sometimes, that the lake is not just happy, joy, play. That sometimes there's fire inside the lake. Sometimes if we would try to feel where revolution is already starting to happen or has already taken us by surprise, we couldn't even say exactly what that is. It's not like necessarily a compartment. It might not necessarily be my sexuality or my work life or where do I want to live, what's my house. Or where am I going to live on the road? It might not be in a compartment. It might be something more subtle and deep than that. And let yourself have a chance over the days to know that you know revolution is happening. And how could you be a friend to that? And how could you make that force of nature be a friend to your spirit, to your deepest heart? Sometimes when we could feel that part of our cloud that's spreading out or disappearing or whatever, building up, whatever kind of change is happening. We could feel it cheerfully, even if it's sad, and that could help us let go with kind of gumption. It could help us take action with clarity where we have been pretending not to see. And it could bring us what I think in the I Ching, this image about fire in the lake is about partly. I think it's a deep image. I don't want to say that this is all that it's about. But the fire in the lake image from the I Ching. I think it brings us the possibility of joy even when there's something painful happening or something that we can't control, something that's explosive, something we don't understand. And it's so there's this different kind of joy that I want to say is bigger than us. That starts to be a phrase that people use a lot. But when something's bigger than us and it's a force and it's hot, it's not always fun. It's not something that, it's something we have to keep reminding ourselves that we need it. And then when we remind ourselves that that transformative power that lives in our bellies also needs us. We need it to kind of clear us up, help us let go, help us take action. And it needs us, and maybe that's where the joy comes in. This something that's this kind of force that can be scary, where life takes us by surprise, and that's not always surprise means we weren't expecting it. It might not be what we wanted. That there still is, and I think we really know this in our bones, there still is joy. But maybe it's a kind of joy that does live in the bones and not on the face. In the I Ching, talking about revolution, they say it's really important to have the patience to wait for the right moment for your revolution to actually happen, like breakthrough. So they mention patience when they're talking about timing, but I think we have to talk also equally and maybe more, even though we tend to be so impatient. Maybe we have to talk even more about having the guts in the right moment to say or do or not say or not do right then. And to start to cultivate a kind of, I like the word immaculate when I'm talking about that, timing. That we could be so immaculately tuned to that knowing that I don't know where I'm going, but there is a kind of a knowing about at least how my body wants to take the next step. And letting that happen, really staying with the whole thing, not then thinking, oh, that step, and then doing it conceptually, but staying with the whole, tuning in the whole time with the action that is called for. What helps us for that immaculate joy, let's say that really precise joy, deep bone joy and its precision, is practicing leaning away from taking everything so personally as we have been taught to do. We have been taught to take every single thing personally. And we can practice in another direction, not taking anything personally. So even when it's someone gives a compliment and that actually does encourage us and helps us feel more energy to keep going in the direction we want to go in, we could still somewhere not take it personally. We could see how that compliment happened to come at the time that it was needed to help me keep going. But it's not even necessarily that it needed to be a true compliment. It helped at the time. But maybe it's not even about me. It's about that deep bone joy moving us. That taking it personal, impersonally, so that the joy can kind of come out of the bones into our life and help us really be precise with timing. They say that helps us move with a revolution only when it really answers a need and it's not just sort of entertainment. That we're kind of bored and we don't want to really do what we know we need to do. So we do something that other people think we should do. We put our energy there. And we know that's not really our calling. It's hard to really feel our calling and acknowledge it and honor it because our real calling, we can't describe it until we've already answered the call. And then 10 years later, we can say, oh, look, that's my calling. I've been trying to tell you all these years. Look, there it is. But I think we could be even suspicious of our stories that we tell, our storytelling, if we do think that we know what we're doing. If we're really sure that we know what we're doing. Especially if we think we know what we're doing when we talk about meditation. Then let's be suspicious. Let's at least be allowed to suspect, to use our nose. I think that we all have enough experience of following some kind of gut knowing without knowing exactly what the outcome was going to be, but it really feeling right and going with that and feeling that what it happens to be called today, deep-boned joy. When we know it's not about creating a drama, even if it looks like it's creating a drama. It's not about creating a drama, even if it looks totally ordinary, it looks like nothing's happening. It's still the revolution and we know it. So there are four points in the I Ching about the revolution is really waiting for the right time, that's important, but also not waiting past the right time. And we can apply this to revolution minute by minute, not just the one that's building up right now in your life in that particular area. But moment by moment, the change that's going on and finding ways to kind of sinuously be moved with that. So that the natural forces that are changing are really adding to our spiritual revolution and not like two separate tandem lives or pulling away from each other. So there's the timing, there's the joy. So the way that we tune in immaculately is not with a hammer and a gun or whatever, forcing ourselves to be immaculate. But because it's joyful to be tuned in. And so the way that we move, the way that we are moved, increases the joy. The way of going about tuning in and being on time, so to speak, brings more joy. That's their second point. There's timing, there's joy. There's that impersonalness, like seeing how things help. They help, but it's not that they were necessarily all about me or only about me. And that then we can see how we are tuning in to something that's not all about me and is answering a real need. The change that's happening that I'm part of, that I'm joining willingly, is answering a real need in me and outside of me. And then there's a really nice sentence that they summarize these pointers for revolutionaries. Only then, so with the timing, the joy, the impersonalness, like accepting gifts but not taking it as a personal gift, and then acting and refraining from acting in a way that answers a real need, only then will one have no regrets. It sounds innocuous. It sounds like an unimportant sentence. Only then one will have no regrets. This would be a good definition of enlightenment. Only then one will have no regrets. So can we feel how being in this room now, here we are, we could kind of track in ourselves what are the habitual tendencies going on. So we're here in a room and we have agreed to be here for 7 days. We can come and go out of the room, but we're on this property for 7 days and we're intending to be in this room a lot with these people that we may not know. Can we tune into how that commitment to give ourselves to ourselves for 7 days has a rightness of timing? In what way does it have a rightness of timing in our lives? And in what way do our habits fight that? So one kind of habit fighting a rightness of timing, a way that this week is a gift, would be that I'm so excited about what's going to happen this week. I think I know what's going to happen, and I'm so excited about it. I'm expecting something really important and big and good. That's habit energy getting in the way of the rightness of the timing of here we are in this room, and who knows what's going to happen in the next 7 days. So we can tune into that feeling of the rightness. Even if it turns out that for you the rightness of timing is that you mostly spend time in your own space and you're not connecting much with what I'm saying, etc., that's also part of a right, could be part of a rightness of timing, a learning. You can tune into that kind of rightness, and also notice how the habit energies are talking and how they're pulling away from just going with that. So I'm going to repeat that when I'm talking about tuning into a rightness of timing, it doesn't mean that you agree with everything that's happening on the retreat with the schedule and with what we're saying out here, but that you agree with something deep in yourself that's bigger than what you know so far. And so if we could feel the possibility of letting this week be a kind of unfolding that is about depth and transformation and letting go and seeing things that we have never wanted to see, and so we didn't see them, and so it might not be fun to see them, and still that it could be a week of profound joy, that it could be a week that it's more joy than you ever thought was possible to sustain in the body, much less the mind. But the heart is singing that. And especially this week, to really feel the difference between an excited joy, or a joy that's known, that we already know, that we would easily call joy right off the bat, and something that's coming up from underground, coming from the bones, that could be scary at first, that we could even take as fear, panic, or terror at first, if we judge it too quickly. Does that make sense? It could be that this deep bone joy is happening and we are translating it as fear through our habit energy system, so to say. So giving some time to the deep boned feelings, in case if they get to breathe a little bit, it might feel out of control, and we could steer right, as we usually do, into fear, but it could be that it's not fear. It's power, otherwise known as love. Otherwise known as what we're all living for. There's another interesting thing in the I Ching about revolution. because of our tendency to fight and then to go along with if there's a forceful movement happening, we could so easily give ourselves to it in an unintelligent way. So if we would be in a crowd and suddenly everyone starts running and we start running with the crowd, we don't know why, and then we trample on someone or whatever. We could so easily move with revolution in that way. And so the I Ching keeps saying, wait for the right moment. Don't just do it because it's mostly right. Or don't just hold back because it's mostly right to hold back, like 100%. And so they emphasize the need for a clear goal. There needs to be, if you imagine a political revolution, there needs to be a clear goal that when that is achieved, we stop fighting. If it would be that kind of revolution. When that happens, we stop fighting. That's the end of the war. If we apply this to the inner life where war doesn't work, not that it works outside either, but we need to learn, practice a few times inside, I think, before we can get it in that world out there. The clear goal would help us stay with our intelligence and not with our idea of being a revolutionary. Where we allow a visit from that kind of transformative power in that area of our life, and we know that that transformation peak time is going to come to an end, and things are going to be gentle there for a while. And that doesn't mean we've gone off the track. And what I would state as our clear goal for the week is tuning in as real a way as we can. To what feels like harmony and what seems to bring more harmony. And to know that we're going to have the tendency to create ideas about what we're doing and about what's happening, and then to start to float back up to the surface, the superficial idea level. So we're going to have the idea that I'm letting go of something in my past. And we're going to have the feeling of tuning into actually being free of the past, which helps the letting go happen. And to feel the difference between those two things. Sometimes the idea will help us, oh right, this week I'm letting go of that person or that job or that place or whatever, that mind tendency. Let me find that feeling again where I can see and feel and know that I'm free of that, that does not live here. So the idea could remind us to come back to the action, let's say, the revolution. Does that make sense? Is there any question? So a clear goal of tuning into an actuality, which, if we're not tuned into it, is only a potentiality. But as soon as we tune into it, is actual. So our potential for love and tuning into the love, our potential for being present or a sense of humor or whatever is needed, whatever answers a real need. As soon as we tune into our potential, it is actual. And as we start to stay and like to live there, there's less and less of a pull towards the habits that we're covering our potential. So we'll be giving meditation instructions, so-called, and guided meditation, so-called, during the week. But it's really important to know that, in our opinion, the most important meditation instructions are already with you. And it's just to have the confidence to tune into them, to hear them, and to follow them as much as you can. And that leaves a lot of room for experimentation, and which means making mistakes. So, for example, there's the pond. And it might really be for some person in here, or half the people, or everyone, it could be, that the best place for you to connect is with your feet in the pond or your whole body in the pond as much as possible. Or it might be that it's for that one person who's in the pond all day. And while you're doing your walking meditation, you see them. And you think pond is more fun than walking, than earth. And then you go against your instructions and you go to the pond. Or you go with the schedule. You go against your instructions. You think they're wrong to be in the pond. I'm doing the right thing. And we leave our instructions. So the schedule is here to kind of entice us away from the habits that we know don't serve us, and also to kind of just know that there might be things that are possible and possibly really helpful that we never tried before. So for example, for many people, the early morning, it's not so early on the schedule, but might be early for some people, is often a really good time for meditation, the kind of atmosphere that happens in the early morning and in the late night as well. For many people, it happens to be really helpful for meditation. And so we want you to rest, but we also want to give you the spark and the encouragement to try, how does the early morning fit you for resting in a different way, for resting towards liberation? But the schedule is not something that we want to encourage you to use as a way of measuring yourself. It does happen easily that we come to the end of the schedule at the end of a day and the last bell rings and there's a kind of relief. We made it through another day. How many days left? Most of my retreats that I went on, I remember spending plenty of time counting, like how many days left and how many hours left and how many bells left and how far have we come and will I make it and that kind of thing. And I want you to enjoy, if there is relief at the end of the day, I want you to enjoy the relief, but maybe also let that help you learn to take pressure off, so that there could be the relief first thing in the morning when you hear the first bell. I'm on retreat. So that the retreat starts to flower as what you most need and what inside you knows what you most need and loves what you most need and loves to eat that. And so that meeting of being able to receive what I need and to give what I need starts the first thing you wake up. So also with the silence, we often say that silence and nature are the two gurus on our retreats. So there is the lake, and there is grass, and there are animals and trees. And let them meet you. They've been waiting all their lives to meet you. Here they are. And the silence is can be harder to connect to, both for people where it's a new situation and for people who know about silence. So I would love to invite you to be fresh with what is silence. One of the main things about silence in a group of people is that we're free to find out who we are by being who we are. So we don't have to say, thank you, please excuse me, etc. Even if we accidentally bump into someone, we don't have to say, oh, I'm so sorry. We are allowed to, if you want to, if your gaze goes to the other person's gaze, that is not against the rules kind of thing. That can happen. That is communication without words. That's okay. Some people want to be in what could be called complete silence, not even communication with eyes. Of course, there's still like 80% of our communication going on anyway. By giving up words and eyes, there's still a lot of communication happening. And for some people, that's enough. And so people are free to be in their own eye gaze space as well as their ear listening space, to just be free of input from other than the clowns up here. So But for the people who kind of love silence and know their silence and have their silence and go in the retreat because it gives them that embrace and kind of protection that is so helpful, to also be free with the people who maybe that gaze is the teaching they came here for, that accidental meeting of eyes that's free and deep. So we're allowed to be here as ourselves and different, and the not using words, helps us, but in a way also makes us meet so much more intimately than we can with words. And that's a lot. It's a lot of meeting. So respecting that and the importance of that in the world. Make way for that deep communication without words, without eyes, and without even body movement. Just in the hall in silence together. Accepting how much communication is. And so for me, when I would go on silent retreats to get away from having to interact because I'm very shy. And so I didn't look around. I looked at my shoes. People would, at the end of the retreat, talk about what they saw happening on the retreat, who did what, and I was like, what? I only know like the three pairs of shoes that happened to be around my pairs of shoes by the entrance of the hall. But I would now, if I as a teacher met myself as a student, I would really encourage myself to let that guard down a little bit. And we're asking for a lot of maturity in there, that we're not saying, pretend that there's no communication. And to signify that pretending, no words and no eye contact. We're saying there is communication, therefore, no words. And some people don't want to make eye contact. And let's see what happens in that kind of soup, that electric soup. Are there any questions so far? We're almost finished with the talking part. Okay. Are you tired? So there's just two simple explorations that I want to mention now that you could just see if they float into your mind during the week, you could try them. Two explorations, three words total. The first one is release pelvis. Something that whenever it comes into your mind, just see what happens if you relax your pelvis. And if you're lying in the hall, sitting in the hall, walking, standing in line, eating your food, just if it comes to mind, see what happens. Just that kind of more relaxed floor. And then the second exploration, the word is rest, which is not surprising on a deep breath retreat. But to really feel what is rest, to let that be an open question. And if you notice anywhere kind of trying to force rest to happen, then maybe it's not. Maybe that's not rest. Maybe it's an idea of rest and just backing up and waiting for your instructions from inside of what would be restful, what would be relaxing and energizing. And as with many revolutions, if we can just back up and ask the question like, oh, I'm trying to rest, what is rest? Something might come that's so subtle. It might just be a tiniest change of position of the hand or the tiniest tuning in inside in the inner atmosphere. That is the revolution that we were building up towards. So if anyone needs to stretch the legs for a moment, or if you want to try lying down, for the meditation, we'll do about, how tired are you? On a scale of 1 to 10. 5? Is that what you said? 6 or 7. Okay, we'll do 20 minutes. And of course, you're always free to sit or lie down or stand in the hall. It's just about welcome. What makes you welcome here? Just as if our center just says, welcome back. No questions asked. Doesn't matter how long we've been away or what crazy things we've been doing. And sometimes it can help to feel the actual back of the body to be welcomed back. Just resting back. And if sometime, either now or during the week, a memory comes kind of floating in like one of those big yellow butterflies of a time when you were a child and just connected, fresh, wide open. Or maybe more recently, but feeling childlike, just looking at the stars or floating in the water or whatever. Can we tune into that moment and into that feeling? Where we have no explanation and we need no explanation. Resting back and letting the forehead release. Letting the feet relax. And just for a few minutes, we're just here, not trying to meditate, not trying to be here. What if just for 3 minutes, there's just absolutely not a right way or a wrong way to be here? Even if it makes me nervous that I don't know what to do and there's not a right way or a wrong way, the nervousness is part of what's happening now. Not right, not wrong. Not personal. Not blocking joy. So if we can be a little bit relaxed and tune in to the feeling of a moment of connection and just keep tuning to that, that's one really good way. Another way is resting back, or maybe resting into your core if that makes more sense to you. And as if opening out, to be open to sounds. Sounds that are coming from apparently from outside and sounds that are coming apparently from inside. And kind of opening our atmosphere, our inner atmosphere, to leave a lot of room for the thinking mind. As if maybe we have a bunch of pet dogs that have been cooped up all day and we just let them run free. kind of a safe field where they can run around. And we don't really need to pay much attention to where they're running. Important thing is to let them run. Let them have space. And meanwhile, what else is happening? Sometimes our attention goes to the dogs, and then again, coming to the openness, the feeling of connection, or maybe it's helpful someplace in the body, the hands, the chest, the feet, the back of the head, or if you're not sure where, you could try the lower belly. It's a good place to develop a friendship with yourself, just by literally feeling what's happening there, if that helps, if that's not getting in the way of just simply connecting or the spaciousness. It adds to the spaciousness to connect to the lower belly or any other place in the body, then good. And sometimes we are so attracted to keep track of what the dogs are doing, all that thinking. It's not that we're not supposed to be thinking. The mind has been trained to think a lot. So right now it's an impersonal thing that's happening. And we can practice tuning in to what else is here. So if we're very attracted to keep track of the thinking, to keep track of what am I thinking, and to get carried away with what I am thinking. We could even feel the out-breath happening. And we could even feel as if all of that thinking is just falling out and getting a little bit more space with each out-breath, while we remain with something else, which might be a physical sensation, a feeling of aliveness, a feeling of spaciousness. Might be remembering that we have permission to relax.